Hello friends, I'm your host Chris Thrall. I'm a former Royal Marines Commando. I've adventured, for better and sometimes worse, across 80 countries on all 7 continents. Welcome to the Bought the T-Shirt podcast. Ian, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm all right, mate. You all right?
Yeah, I'm okay. I think our microphones are slightly different level, so I'm not going to shout into this one. I'm going to leave it there. So, I'll tell you what prompted this chat, Ian. Let me just show our friends at home. I was listening to John St. Julian, the wonderful John St. Julian, who I recommend everybody listen to. Every now and again, John throws in a kind of curveball. Like UFOs, as in he saw a UFO, and I'm a bit of a, you know, Ian, I've kind of got my feet planted firmly on the ground. I have to see something to believe it, or I'll entertain the idea, but I'm not going to put all of my chips on that square. Recently I was in the sauna listening to John, and he talked about seeing reptilians, as in like our reptilian overlord. You know, let me just play a bit here, folks.
One, I will point out with the common term demon, a energy form that yearns for a physical body to manifest sensation through. They stalk permanently, hoping to access a body or attach to a body in some small way to feel the sensation of the 3D once again. These demons are lower astral beings that feed on the same suffering and torment that they, through their conscious choices and abusive free will, have become addicted to, familiar with, in the same way humans can get addicted to stress hormones. They are very lost, but they are not without personality. They are individual sentient life forms, sometimes making up collectives, legions, as the Bible called it. The other entity I saw has a body, and the location of that body has been something of a conundrum in my life as I try to work out where they are. I began to perceive they were extra-dimensional. They were from another dimension, at least. But the body that they have in that dimension wishes to also feel the sensation of the 3D without having a permanent residence within it. These beings also extract energy from the 3D realm by creating biological machines, fallen species. You see, their rebellion leaves them in a frequency range where they can't access the one infinite energy source, the generous heart of Creator. And so what they do is create slave species. They hack humanity and other sentient life, and in that hack we feel a void, a state of separation from Creator. And in that longing to return to the wholeness of Creator's presence, in our amnesic state, we begin to search and seek inside the world and the comfortable prison cell of worldly desire to fill that state of separation that the higher dimensional slave technology within us has created.
Whoa, John's going deep, deep undercover.
He really reminds me of a young Liam Neeson in the film John Borman version of Excalibur from the 80s. He really looks like, it's not a bad look.
He reminds me of Jesus.
Druids.
Naturally. So what's John saying there is there's these entities, you know, these higher being cannot experience this realm that we in the 3D material realm. So they create a technology in which I didn't get whether they create a human form so that they can experience it, or whether they install technology in, they've installed technology human to stop humans making that all essential divine connection, living in the lower self, living in the material world, the greed, the hate, the envy, the, you know, pornography and all the shit. And as such, leeching that, and what do you call it? Looshing that energy from humans. But regardless of, and as you can probably tell, it's quite deep. I mean, I wouldn't lose sleep, friends at home, trying to get my head around this. I sometimes wonder whether I was better off not knowing any of this stuff.
See the bags under my eyes.
Yeah. So that was the first thing. And Ian, if I just may continue, brother, just bear with me. And then I had a fascinating podcast with this chap, former Navy SEAL, Bob Wiegand. Okay.
Yes. And this got deleted, didn't it?
Say again.
Isn't that the one that got deleted?
Yeah.
That's the one I first was, yeah, when we first spoke, that was the one I was trying to find.
Yeah. This is the only podcast, friends. So Bob is a former Navy SEAL. He lives over there in Hawaii, I think on Maui. Incredible orator. And also we're going to talk about Credo Mutwa, friend of David Icke's. I don't know if he's still alive. We'll have to check. But also an incredible orator. And Bob just tells a story that is, I'm just going to say, it's almost like beyond belief. But one thing he said in our chat was he was talking about the table of 300, you know, this committee of 300 that control the whole goddamn show. And he mentioned that I can't remember whether he called it a grey, an alien or a reptilian. I was trying to find it and I was struggling. He said they walked through the wall. OK, I'm chuckling a bit because I'm not going to go putting all my chips on this square, folks, just so you know. But I'd never dismiss anything that out of hand. But let me just play you a couple of bits or play you something from it. And this, friends, sorry, what I was going to say is this is the only podcast I've ever had removed from YouTube to my recollection. And not only did they remove it, they removed it with no warning, no flag, no demonetization, no nothing. I just got a message from YouTube said, we've removed that video. A video in which it talks about the Council of 300, Table of 300, Committee of 300, George Bush's place in it, which bit random. Let me just play a bit. Too much talking, Chris, not enough playing. Story of my life.
The details of what a sacrifice is all about. I can do that if you want in a minute, but I'm just trying to give you high level. Right now, there's technology being beamed onto the entire planet that creates frustration in the heart, and it feeds off of things within the person's mind, like, he cheated on me, or that guy ripped me off, or, you know, this man was killed by the cops. There must be justice, and they get a holographic image inside them, in their mind, that they think is real, and they go to act on it. It's funny how this thing crossed the world. The same type of protest has crossed the world. There's no one that could orchestrate that. There's no one man, George Soros, to orchestrate that thing. It's running on autopilot. It's frequency that I reject it. I reject this frequency and what it's doing to us. If it was shown, if these ETs really revealed themselves, these entities, these beings, these ones, they're humans like us. If they really revealed themselves and said, hey, you know, guys, we're really sorry. We really took it too far. You guys have gone insane farther than we're willing to go. And if you don't stop, the game's over. And we got to, if they revealed themselves, the whole world would turn on them and kill them all. We would chase them across the ends of the universe. Because what they've done is an absolute crime, a crime against.
How can you physically chase an entity, Bob? But it all sounds a bit kind of like, I was going to say Scooby-Doo, but in Scooby-Doo, it was always the bloody farmer, wasn't it? Or the... I wouldn't have got away with it. It wasn't for you pesky kids. But
it depends. You know, there are people who die and they're like called...
Okay, Ian, I'm just going to stop that there because it's more this phenomenon that there are entities that can shapeshift into human or have installed technology within us. I'm a bit old school. I'm just going to say I think we evolved. I think we may have evolved an infinite amount of times, and not just in the infinite dimensions, but I mean in this dimension. What I'm saying is I think civilizations have come and gone, and I mean we're talking over billions and billions and billions, if not more years. And I think that there's some screw up in the technology, as in our brains technology, that we're still applying our, you know, hunter-gatherer instincts to modern life, where you can just eat fat and sugar and salt all day long. and our bodies just cannot resist that. And then we've got the cleverness to take the iron ore out the rock and the oil out the ground, create all this technology to give us the lap of quote unquote luxury, which kind of plays to our ancestral primate need to like only work where necessary, you know, to take what you need, work where necessary. And I think that you have to be strong, and you have to be strong to overcome it. Hence, I'm always talking about peel the onion to reach enlightenment. You got to get rid of, you know, scrolling all day, the endorphins. You got to get rid of the junk food diet, which is all diet, folks. I don't mean, you know, just McDonald's or something. Western toxic carbohydrate diet. You got to be strong and say it doesn't serve you. The alcohol, it's not a treat. I'm not lecturing here, folks. I'm just giving an example. You know, the alcohol, it's not a treat. Get rid of it. The fornication, what we all did a bit of when we was young servicemen, a bit is a euphemism. But, you know, and it's only when you get rid of these easily available excesses that you can immerse yourself in all day long if you want. And the government even pay you to do it, because you can be on benefits and, you know, live a pretty luxurious lifestyle compared to living in a cave. And yet it's only the scarcity, the peeling the onion, the going back to the basics, going back to that scarcity, getting cold and wet, exercising your lungs, breathing, the basics that get you to paradise. So, Ian, sorry, I don't always hate like talking a lot, but I love to like, you know, or I feel the need that I've got to like lay the table out. So you know where I am, and our friends at home know where we are. So I'll just shush there for a minute.
I think also we, like you often say, Chris, in your videos, we're trying to figure this stuff out. And for me, I feel that we're in this part of our existence in 2020, whichever calendar that is, that we're starting to thread ancient knowledge and, you know, very kind of far ahead scientific discoveries together. And I don't know how many dimensions scientists of now, modern scientists exist, and we understand frequency very well. And I think that we're starting to understand that maybe what the ancients think about were experiences are, well, I would call them metaphysical, because, you know, on the one hand, you've got you as within, so without, things that you experience mentally, your interpretation of physical events which affect you emotionally and mentally then kind of come out in a certain way, and vice versa. And I think we're at this cross point where we're starting to understand so much ancient knowledge that's recently been discovered, like the Gnostic texts. You know, we talked about that on our phone call today. You know, the old Gnostic books, they're only discovered in the 70s. And then we've got theories of gamma, theta, sound frequencies, which, you know, possibly we're understanding interdimensional relations are possible from a scientific. And let's not forget that the ancients, they didn't distinguish religion and magic, astro theology. You know, it was all part of one whole thing. It wasn't separated. So just want to say that to people who maybe have just jumped into what we're talking about and put it in some sort of context. Now, just before I go on, Chris, are you still in touch with Bob? Have you contacted him since that? Because that was one of my first videos that I saw on your channel, and it was mind-blowing. And I had some questions asked.
It was, something happened after.
Okay.
Quite random.
Right.
And because I obviously can't go there with my guests personal, then it's not something I can talk about. But you can say somebody chased me up. It wasn't like your state or I won't say why. Huh. And then also I noticed recently that Bob reappeared on this YouTube channel here, so people can go and read that. And on this YouTube, this is fairly recent, it's about a year ago. So I podcasted him about 4 years. On this one, he's talking about being crashing as a pilot and leaving his body. And I wanted to cover this as well, Ian. These, when people talk about exceptional life stories, but what I wanted to say here is, so, well, you can see there, I've just Googled Bob, pilot plane crash in Maui. And I'm not trying to say anything here, but like nothing's coming up. which I thought was rather strange. You know, if there was a plane crash, you know, I'm a pilot myself. I'm pretty sure if I didn't return to the airport. I remember flying out of Fort Pierce in Florida many, many times. And if I had crashed the plane, oh my God, it would have been like a local huge thing in the flight community.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
And the local area, they would be talking about it for years. You know? So I found that strange. And what I wanted to say, because I've just showed up a picture of the wonderful Credo Mutwa, who's very good friends with the wonderful David Icke. And Credo tells some tale to David, one of which is of the reptilian people. I was listening to it in the car this morning. Again, Ian, it's too much for me to take in.
I sent you the whole 6 hours, didn't I?
Which is fine, because, I mean, I listened to it years ago. And here's the thing. Does it matter if reptilians are amongst us? Well, who cares? Because it put me on to David Icke, this chat, years ago. We're talking about 10 years ago. And that opened my mind that, you know, there is stuff that, you know, there's a lot of counter-narrative stuff out there. And that journey took me to enlightenment. So I don't care whether Credo really did see reptilian. It's irrelevant to all learning here. Now, what I wanted to say is, when you listen to Credo, I mean, when you look at the gentleman, I'm just going to be honest here for the sake of that we all can learn. I see traits of childhood trauma in, and it's been suggested to me that some of my guests have, you know, they're manifesting childhood trauma. And this isn't the only, well, there was another, you know, there's, I won't mention the names of the guests, but it's when they come out with this incredible, and it's so articulately presented in a very flowing manner, as if it's coming straight from source, from some kind of, you know, thing going on, Ian, that we don't have in our heads, and it comes out in this, you know, this holistic, this kind of holistic narrative that, when you think about the alien abduction, they're also said to be linked to childhood trauma, and I'm not poo-pooing. How do I know? I always say, I'm just a thick ex-Marine.
There's such a link there.
But I think we have to always ask the question, you know, trauma manifests. Look at the elites. They're all, you know, imagine the stuff they had done to them as kids. It's hardly surprising they all grow up as a bunch of wrong-uns. Do you know what I mean?
Do you think Bob might have experienced something like MKUltra? I don't want to speak out of town or
about
someone I don't know. Because in his interview with you, Chris, he also mentioned he was practicing Palo Mayombe, and that really tweaked my interest at that point, because that's African tradition. Religions are a speciality of mine in terms of I'm not an initiate, but it's something I spend a lot of time studying. And we know Palo is the most powerful form of magic that exists from a metaphysical perspective. And I just thought it was really interesting as well. If you're involved in that, you're dealing with some extremely volatile forces. And I just thought it was interesting that that was also in that.
Am I right in thinking that's the magic from the pollination from...
That's
from
Congolese magic, which came over from the old world to the new world. So it's in Haiti, it's in America, where it's all around now. But it's Congolese black magic. But it's rooted in a form of voodoo. It's wrongly called the dark side of Sansa. It's just part of the family of Africa. You also hear it called Palo Monte in the new world, but Palo Mayombe or the Reglas de Congo. It's a Congolese tradition which goes back to antiquity. And so, yeah, that fascinated me that he was also saying that.
I've met witch doctors in Africa. Not supposed to call them witch doctors because effectively they're shaman. But there is also that element of like how much a load of nonsense and they're taking advantage. I mean, I saw some stuff. We got taken to a cave deep in Mozambique. It's funny. First, we threw rice in the water, threw this handful of rice in the water and all these bubbles come up, and that was said to be some spirit, but I just thought it frogs farting. Or and I saw how it affected the local, who all went a bit doolally and started slapping the water in the cave over them, you know, saying these prayers in their tribal tongue. And then blimmin' old matey boy, I'm from Northern Ireland, one of my Western co-workers, I made a joke and he just like dug me in the ribs and went, shut up. I was like, oh, dude, you just can't expect me to take this seriously. It's just, you know, I would have said back then it was all mumbo jumbo. And there's a massive part of me now. No, there's, you know, I definitely get energy, vibration and frequency. That's just a given. In fact, Ian, I don't even know anything. Sorry about this. You're going to have to take over the show.
I'll take it back. I take it back to metaphysics. And I think, you know, I've certainly experienced trauma and some weird stuff's happened around that. And I think that we can certainly understand that our brains are active on a different level. Our bodies, our minds are active when we experience certain things, which I don't want to use the word doorway, but it does, or portal, but I think we're open to other frequencies maybe that are in existence, that which our brains are not day to day, you know, when we're going to the shop or whatever, are working on. And I think that's really obvious. But I just wonder, with the Credo Mutsworth thing, as a Zulu shaman, he talks about it. He underwent some really hardcore initiation, including eating god flesh, which I understand is a metaphor for some type of magic mushroom. Maybe it is the flesh of a god. I don't know. But
Ian, I'm just gonna play our wonderful friends at home a little bit, just so they know who we're talking about.
Can the mother mind within every one of you human beings? Our people believe that every human being, male or female, has got two minds, the mother mind and the warrior mind. The warrior mind looks at things logically. The warrior mind says 2 + 2 = 4. But the mother mind says nothing. The mother mind, I don't know how I can explain. The mother mind does not think in a line way as warriors. The mother mind thinks sideways and upwards. We must awaken the mother mind within us.
He sounds like he's talking about the mother mind. He sounds about making the leap from left brain to right brain balance, doesn't he?
He's a fascinating. It's a shame he's not around to have him on your show.
Friends at home, could I just ask everyone, because we got a lot of people watching, could you just chuck us a like and subscribe, friends? And if you're already subscribed, can you just double check that you're subscribed, because we get so many people unsubscribe from us. Thank you. Sorry, Ian.
No, I was going to say, I think he had a massive influence on Ike, and unsurprisingly, what I was saying, I think, you know, in his position, he underwent some hardcore initiation, you know, any mystery, all the way down to the Masons have their initiations. And is that a type of mind control? Is that a kind of trauma-based mind control? To be discussed, but it brings us back to the reptilian agenda. And I think, you know, the Ike Mutsworth interview is the kind of the key modern day interview that's discussing that topic. And I think that we're at a point now where we're catching up with history and we're catching up with ancient. And there seems to be two very specific of thought. One is the Sumerian story, the tablets, the cuneiform. On the other hand, you have the Gnostic. They're essentially saying very similar things, i.e. that we have beings, these elites, in our ancient DNA past, the Anunnaki. The Gnostics refer to them as the Archons, and in the Sumerian tradition, which conflates with the biblical of the watch and the Nephilim. And the two don't see eye to eye. And I think what we're sort of experiencing today is a bunch of people who are trying to understand how all this fits together, as we are tonight with this, and trying to reconcile the difference in the two. And the Gnostics will say that they're right. And that's interesting because, you know, how come the biblical stories and the ancient Sumerian cuneiform completely confer, you know? But the Gnostic stuff is very, very, very interesting as well.
Yeah, can
they
I
have
chip
their differences?
Chip in there. All it is I think we need to make a decision on scripture. Like, well, Not, I don't mean me and you. Was the Gospel of Thomas one of the Gnostic Gospels?
Yeah.
Found in Nag Hammadi.
Exactly.
And so here's the thing. Gospel of, I heard a Harvard professor giving a lecture on Gospel of Thomas, said to be Jesus's twin brother. Just a, you know, one of them random things that's out there, because his name was Thomas Didymus, and Didymus means testicle or twin. And the Harvard professor was lecturing his students, and he said, look, you know, this gospel, it just doesn't make any sense. I mean, he says, just take this, for example. A woman, she's coming home from the market, and she's got a hole in her shopping bag, and when she gets home, all the shopping is gone. I mean, what the, what is that supposed? And I'm just sat there going, professor, it's not so much allegory, it's metaphor. People will go their whole lives not realizing that the answer, it's inside you. It's all around. And they will get to the end of their life, empty life, like that shopping bag. I mean, empty of spirit. And they won't even know because they never bothered to look. Just so that's Gospel of Thomas. But I was flicking through a few things earlier. This is the Dictionary of All Scriptures and Myths, of which I've got both volumes, and I love decoding the scripture, and I like looking at what does giants mean when they talk about giants, that there were giants of men on the land. And the in the Book of Enoch, it talks about the entities above,
the watchers,
impregnating the women of the earth, and then it all goes to hell in a handcart, from what I can understand.
They have a race of giants called the Nephilim.
Yeah, and this is interesting because this is one of the few definitions in the Book of Allegory, in the Book of Scripture, that actually is they've given it a physical definition rather than an allegorical one. Allegorical being, so Bethlehem, house of bread. Bread being bread from heaven, your spirit, I suppose, or manna or chi. This one here, symbols of early mankind, in great ape-like forms, resident on continents, now mostly submerged. So this is actually, you know, deciphering scripture literally as opposed to allegorically. So my point here is, I don't know how much of this stuff about like Nephilim and Sumerian tablets and how much of it's allegory, because a lot of people you hear talk about this, especially, you know, content providers, historians, whatever, they always talk literally about scripture. And
yeah, I agree, Chris.
You know, it's a little bit like, you know, the land of milk and honey. It's not a place.
I always say that it's both allegory and history. I mean, you know, that's my did a whole nearly 2 hours on it, before, didn't we, on the Anunnaki and the Nephilim. But at the same time, looking around it, why were all the apocrypha, except Book of Jubilees, they were taken out of the Bible, weren't they? King James, like, it was just so inconvenient, that stuff lying around, got rid of it. Now that possibly gives birth to conspiracies around those. Not saying yes or no, but. You know, that there's an interesting thread there. And they do conflate with the Sumerian texts. So at a time when Christianity is trying to establish itself very monotheist worldwide, it's not good to have that stuff lying around, is it? Like, let's get rid of it. But then at the same time, you look at the Nag Hammadi texts, the whole body of Gnostic literature that was only found in the 70s. And we don't have as much, you know, we don't have thousands of years of discourse like we do on the Bible, from scripture, Nag Hammadi texts, from the Gnostic. So for me, the Gnostic texts shine a real spotlight on some of these concepts and some of these historical. And so I think today we're trying to grapple with that knowledge. It's relatively new. And I think that the appearance of those knowledge really shone a light on a lot of this stuff. And I think that's now why we're in a bit of a muddle, aren't we? We've got, you know, we've got bloody Paul Wallace and Graham Hancock and bless him, Billy Boy over here, with all their stuff going on. You know, people like Jason Archaics, who've got a lot of time for, is kind of pulling apart their argument over on this side. He's saying that the Anunnaki, all the Archons, whatever they were from Earth. They were among us, possibly from underground, like sites like Göbekli Tepe, for example. And, you know, I'm at this point kind of on his side, because I feel that everyone wants us to look up, don't they? With all of this UFO stuff lately, again and again, it's come around.
Have you noticed how there seems to be so many references to inner Earth now? I think they've just brought out a film about it.
It's coming, yeah.
And they're talking about...
Are they trying to control the narrative on inner Earth now?
This is why I'm quite happy to, like, not know loads of...
I agree, and I've got to that point where I looked up, then I looked down, now I'm looking all over the place, you know, I'm dizzy. And so, but it brings us back to your point, Chris, is that we've got to look within. You know, let's not look up, let's not look down. We look within ourselves and we are our own saviour.
Absolutely.
And that's it.
So just a quick one, because Kenny brought this up. So do you remember, I mean, I never watched it because I've never liked science fiction. I didn't watch Star Wars for years and years. I actually quite like Star Wars. I love the allegory behind it, I don't know what the right word is, metaphor. But... Kenny pointed out the TV series V, and I was just reading it here. Science fiction television series, a continuation of the V franchise about an alien invasion of Earth by a carnivorous race of reptilians known as Visitors, which was originally conceived by American writer, producer. I don't know why I'm reading that. That's irrelevant. Now,
was that before Aliens? Alien. It was. I remember it as a kid. It terrified me. I wasn't allowed to watch it.
Yeah, it's saying 1985, but it's part of the V franchise, which was original.
I remember the original TV series. Yeah.
It's saying it came from novels between 1984 and 88. So, so first off, we're talking Hollywood, and we know who controls Hollywood.
Those nice Sabbateans.
Are they taking a narrative that's out there and they're putting it in the public face to do the double negative? Like, hey, look, we're showing you this, therefore it can't be real. Or are they planting the seed that, hey, look at this, this is going to get the conspiracy theorists all, you know, their knickers in a twist?
It was also hot on the tails of Zachary Sitchin, the 12th Planet, who was the kind of leading expert. Anunnaki being ET kind of theory, you know, it was really of the time that was 17 was all coming back.
I'm sort of tempted to go with your observation there, Ian, that the answers are inside, and it's energy, vibration and frequency. And yeah, it's lovely to think that there's little green men that fly around in dog bowls, but it all seems very And it's lovely to think that there's under Earth, inner, but just, is it not that, I just, maybe life's not that exciting, mate, you know? Maybe it's just not that exciting.
Well, what the hell would they do if everyone did look? They wouldn't be in control anymore. And I think that's the thing. They want us to look up, they want us to look down, look left, look right. But at the end of the day, we just need to look ourselves in the mirror and figure out how to be the best version of ourselves we can be, and that in itself takes a lifetime, never mind whether or not we are descendant from greys or Nephilim. Or and it's fascinating. I mean, don't get me wrong, this stuff has fascinated my whole life, but I've got to that point now where I'm like, it doesn't sort of matter anymore to me, because I've still got to do the work on myself. That's an ongoing process.
Well, it's sorry, I'm just grabbing a couple of comments. Let's talk about that, Ian, because as you know, this has been my sort of my bag, I believe, is the expression, for a while now. And okay, I've done, you know, I'm a lifelong learner. I've watched whatever I can. I've never really like read books on spirituality or energy, or I find them really boring, if I was honest. But I worked all this out. I worked out what the Matrix is. It was my experience through the SCOVI-DOVI, you know, the last 3 years, leading the Global Veterans Alliance up to London, and seeing the division within a single organisation that was professing to be marching for freedom, all united against the procedure, and just seeing how far away everybody was within one organisation. I mean, in layman's terms, there was like just downright nasty, nasty veterans in there. Really just despicably horrible. Everything, you know, against the brother and sisterhood, that, you know, going against everything the brother and sisterhood, quote unquote, stands for. There were people that if you mention the word spirituality, just didn't know anything about it. So therefore they thought you were talking about religion. Therefore they threw their toys out the pram. There were other people that if you didn't give them all your time, your attention, your energy, they thought they were being ignored and they threw hissy. And I learned so much, Ian, with respect to this journey of enlightenment about exactly where individuals are. The public were down here, you know, going along with the mainstream media narrative because it's all they're conditioned to do. Many of the people up there in London were fourth dimension. They'd awoken to this oppression. They realized, you know, that this was not a good choice for people that value their health and value their family. Something was very wrong in this narrative. That's fourth dimension. But it takes a committed person. Oh, I say committed. Maybe it takes a highly damaged person, i.e. me, you know, perhaps that's you, Ian. I don't wish to sound rude. You know, who wants to transcend this effing bullshit, because that's what it is, you know, who wants to find peace in their life and contentment in their heart and understand why we're here and wake up without anxiety and without depression, etc., etc. So that is what pushed me, plus the fact I was dying of chronic addiction, which has been a lifelong thing for me. You know, it's every day's a school day. And if I didn't, I don't think I'd be here anymore. I've watched a lot of my friends, you know, go to the big party in the sky. And I can physically see, and here's the thing, it's just so hard to get this if you don't get it. Some people just get it. They look at it and they just get it, right? But to go from fourth dimension into enlightenment, you have to do stuff. And I know I say this a lot, but Ian, you can't just share YouTube videos. It doesn't work like that. You've got to peel the onion, and I'm still doing it. There's probably stuff about me tonight and stuff I've said where people can tell I've still got stuff to work on, okay? But first off, you've got to get on top of the ego. It's a really difficult thing to do for damaged people because we're hurt and we don't want to be hurt anymore and we don't want to be misunderstood. Very tempting to fire back at people. Secondly, you've got to get your body into that crystal. You have to be alkaline. You just do. And alkaline means eating a majority vegetable diet, not vegan, no, nothing like that. You've got to counterbalance the toxic carbohydrate and the acid it causes. That's because your body's a crystal and you want to feel that energy coming through you because the energy brings the answers. You can't drink. I mean, I'm not saying you can never drink, but when you've got alcohol in your system, it physically severs the connection because it's a poison. You've got to be on goodwill with all people. This is why, you know, when people harm you, you've just got to have nothing but love for them back. It's just the way that the frequencies work. And what I'm getting at, Ian, isn't to, you know, big up people that have been on that journey or put people down that struggle with their addictions or their eating or because, you know, it's a heavy program from birth. It's heavy. You know, you try giving up the chips. But my thing is, it's so easy to divert from that. That's your path. That's what everybody's looking for, is that's how you find it. It's so easy to not do those things which require a bit of discipline. And you have to work at them. It's easy to go to aliens and reptilians and you know, let's take over the government and take the police stations down and screw the WEF. And, you know, do you get what I'm saying? I'm not saying these entities don't exist. I'm just talking, Ian, because I think it's fascinating, you know.
I think I think the thing about the Gnostic stuff as well is quite interesting. If you do look at that allegorically, I can't say that word, in terms of allegory, let's just say if we're going to look at the Sumerian and the scriptures as allegorical, let's apply the same filter to the Gnostic. And the general concept with Gnostics is that Earth, the planet, is ruled by an evil god, and it's our responsibility or our calling, if you like, to transcend that prison planet to get closer to the real creator, which is outside. And I think you can apply that as a concept, as an allegory, as a metaphor to your life in the same way, in terms of what you've just... So again, the idea is that we are our own salvation, that we have it within ourselves, escape whatever prison has been created for us or we've created for ourselves. And I think that that's a valuable lesson when you're looking at that.
Yes, well, just... Sorry, go on, Ian.
No. I was just going to say, so whether or not you believe what Paul Wallace says about the elves being our kind of, whether it's an alien race, whatever Sitchin said, or whatever Archaix is saying on the other side of it, it's all interesting, good stuff. Still, for me, boils down to the fact that we've been given this gift as individual humans, where we have this incredible ability to affect each other, affect ourselves for good or for bad. And we need to honor that. It all starts from within. And the more and more you learn that lesson through life, and the more you make the effort to try and follow that journey, the more influence you will actually have on other people, because they'll see it in you. They'll see that light shining. And conversely, if you're that horrible, bitchy, negative person in a room, guess what? You're not going to have many friends. Again, it all comes down to that.
Yeah.
I'm not saying don't study these ancient texts, because they're absolutely fascinating, but...
Yeah, I'm just going to show the pillars of Kabbalah here, or you can insert the three crosses. Was it Calvary, the hill where Jesus met his desires? It's all this, all the Freemasonic pillars. It's all the same thing, friends, Ian, I believe. And that's that you have the one down the middle represents the true overseer of the universe. And then the one to the right represents your quote unquote devil, your temptation, and the one on the left represents the other way, being too much of a bloody do-gooder. So this is, I don't know if you call this God or whatever. That's why they say that one, when you see the pictures of Jesus and the two thieves that he was crucified with, one of them has got his head turned to Jesus, and the idea is that the reason the head's turned is, okay, you are at an extreme, you're either too good, you're being too good, or you're being too evil. Whereas what we should do is choose the middle path. But the reason his head's turned is it's indicating that it's better to be on the too good, being too much of a do-gooder, than it is to be on the evil path. And yeah, it's just... There's enough going on in life to work on ourselves. There's too much. There's so much work to do. There's so much work to do. Can you stop that cup of coffee? Or some people will drink five or six in a day. Can you cut that down? Can you cut it down to one? Could you then stop that one? Could you then replace it with, say, a barley drink, a barley coffee? But that barley's probably filling you full of acid because it's a carbohydrate. Could you then wean yourself off that barley drink? Could you stop watching online porn? These are things people I'm talking realities here, Ian. These are the things that are blockers, and the elites, I use that term loosely, the controllers, the parasite, the people that control the parasite class well understand they need your essence. They need your energy. That's why the media and TV is all such crap. How many more horror films do we need? They're bloody awful.
We watched the film Babylon the other night, just because I hadn't kind of was, there was a little itch, dirty little itch to see it. And it was an interesting film to watch. The one with old Bradley Pitt.
I thought Babylon was about the police force in Toxteth.
Yeah, Brinsley Ford from Masvad. That is a bloody good film, actually. That's the better Babylon.
But before, Ian, just before I lose my thread, what I'm saying is what I'm finding is it's become an all-consuming battle just to understand who I am, And I don't say that lightly. I mean it. I'm questioning like whether I should even have a YouTube channel. What is this for? What purpose does this serve in my life at the level that I'm trying to reach? I question, you know, why is it I fail? Why is it that if I say I'm not going to have a drink, then I can end up having a drink and wiping out 2 weeks of my life because I feel so, you know, it has such a negative effect, not and plus a whole load of other stuff I won't even go into, but it's
because we're flawed, because we're essentially flawed.
Hey, speak for yourself.
And I used to think that's because we were descendants of fallen angels, you know,
but Nephilim. The next thing, sorry, and I'll come back, I'm just going to say one more thing. Isn't it so easy, rather than work on those things with ourselves that we all know what they are, and there's so many, you know, just get to the gym. Stop talking about, I might go to a gym. You get to the gym. Stop saying, I'd like to run a marathon. Just put in for the marathon. You know, all this stuff that we, isn't it much easier to like slag off Klaus Schwab all day and blame him for everything? Or, you know, bloody Zuckerberg or
Lizard.
But no, go on. You were saying fallen angels.
No. I mean, I always used to sort of think about this thing, like, why? What is it in our DNA ancestry gives us incredible ability to do both things, self-destruction, self, you know, growth? And that always fascinated. I'm not saying I've figured it out, but it did lead me. That question, as a very young kid, led me to discovering research and mystery, because I just knew that there was answers in the past. Now, I don't have the answer, but I feel like I've got enough evidence to just sort of be at peace with it and to say, well, for whatever reason it is, whether it is reptilians or shapeshifters or just being devil's advocate to myself, it sort of doesn't matter at this point, because we're sort of masters of our own destiny and it's down to us to do the work, and it's that simple. And the purpose of life is life itself.
Profound. Profound, mate. On that note, should we go over to locals and we can F and blind over there and maybe say some stuff that we can't say on the other platforms.
I want to just discuss this website I sent you.
Oh, absolutely. Sorry.
It's really interesting.
Yeah, let me.
Just to tie it back to the subject.
All right, so tell me what you want. Do you want Nicholas de Vere?
Yeah, Nicholas de Vere. He wrote a book called The Royal Dragon Court, and he's HRH. He's royal bloodline. He actually wrote a book describing exactly what the whole bloodline thing is about, relating to. I found his website. He apparently died in 2013. I found that out today, just doing a bit of research for this show, which is a shame, because I can't quite figure out if he was an absolute renegade or he was just a kind of major asset to sort of put people looking in the other direction, because on his website it's fully Rosicrucian Masonic. It's very open about it as well, but he talks about the bloodlines. And the reason I'm mentioning the dragon bloodline specifically is because the dragon is the ultimate reptilian archetype. Okay, you don't get more reptilian than a dragon, you know. There he is. So I think you should go to the gym wearing this, if anyone recognizes. But his website was just really interesting, and he's saying that his family bloodline, and there's a whole diagram of the family bloodline, and there's a tree. Really, really, really interesting. I just found it recently. But basically, yeah, the bloodline of the dragon bloodline, it goes back to the Proto-Scythians. It's the Anunnaki bloodline. He's very open about it. And his disclaimer at the end is to say that we're not shape-shifting reptiles as people like David Icke. That's quite a statement there. Anyway, his book is absolutely fascinating.
Right, quick refresher for all of us and our friends at home. Anunnaki.
The Sumerian gods, the elite, supposedly extraterrestrial.
Okay. That's
questionable.
And if they're not coming from, you know, outer space or whatever, where's he saying they come from?
Well, he's not saying where they're from, just saying that that is the original bloodline. This is the origin of theocracy. This is the origin of theocracy. Theocracy meaning gods ruling the earth. Okay. Or the sons of which papal and royal bloodlines, the Anunnaki were the foundation for that that fact. And he's saying that his bloodline, the dragon bloodline, is that bloodline. And he relates it all the way through history, including the Khazars on one side, Merovingians, which we've talked about in the past.
And
he threads it all together.
I'm a bit confused. So you said they weren't coming from, they weren't shapeshifted.
Well, it's just that it's known as the Dragon Bloodline.
But where did the Anunnaki come from? Like,
that's open to question still. We don't know. If you take the Sumerian clay tablets and Sakura Sitchin's version, we know he was wrong about his translation. They were ETs. If we look at the Gnostic version, known as, they're called the Anunnaki, the Archons, they were already.
He's saying a bit like what John St. Julian said, that they're slightly phased out of this three-dimensional reality.
Right, and that's where it's interesting, because there we're getting into the merging of these concepts, which is where we started the show. And if we take that with quantum physics and what we know about energy fields and sound frequency and the possibilities of thousands of dimensions, not just three or four or five, we're starting to get to the modern day where we're looking at an amalgamation of all these different concepts together. I think that's where your mate's at. He's sort of getting a bit from here, a bit from here, and a bit figuring it all out. Not saying he's right or he's wrong, but that's just where I think he's coming from. And we are at that cross point. Does that make sense?
It does. I find it fascinating, because another thing as well we've got to remember is, I've been chronically mentally unwell. So I know what it's like to be mad. Sorry, I use that term
with respect.
Use it in literary terms, you can say. But, you know, I know what it's like to hear the voice. And I spoke to someone else the other day that had been through psychosis as well. And they were like, Chris, it's your voice though, isn't it? I'm like, yes, it's like your voice, but it's coming from outside you. It's fascinating. It's your voice talking to you, and your own thoughts are answering it back. And I used to believe I just overloaded my synapses with too much drugs, basically, that my brain the chemistry could no longer function.
And PTSD as a result of chronic anxiety, right?
No, this is crystal meth, which is self-medicating childhood trauma, isn't it, PTSD? Right.
But that would have created more and more trauma from all the comedowns, presumably.
To be honest, I wasn't sleeping for anything up to 9 days at a time, you know, not a good, and not, you don't eat at all. Well, hardly at all, because I used to binge. I'm just sort of going off subject. But what happened is I saw a comment in my comment section. Someone went, Chris, no, you didn't. Your synapses in your brain weren't overloaded. You'd open yourself up to jinn, so spirit, you know, evil spirits. And I remember I was so quick to write that off. I'm like, well, you know, I'm never going to completely write something off, because you don't get on the tree of learning if you write everything off. So I thought, okay, I'll put that on the back burner, let's say. And lo and behold, all these, you know, we're talking like 5 years later now, I see what that person was meaning. I'm still not saying that I believe that the, and when I spoke to Jerry Marzinski about mental health, about psychiatry, as it used to be called, and he was saying, Chris, it's not your medical condition. It's a spiritual condition. It's the darkness which get to control. And Jerry puts forward an hypothesis that you can't argue with. It's like, bloody hell, yeah, it kind of is like that, isn't it? And this way he's saying that the whole of psychiatry really needs looking at, because they're medicating people, putting more poisons into their body when they're already gripped by the darkness, as it were.
God, absolutely. You know, we know people, be careful what I say here, but there's some experiments going on, some of these.
Yes. Okay. Right, let's go over to locals then, because I want to probe you a bit more on this dragons thing, and there's some stuff that I can say that you asked me some questions I can't, you know. We got a good thing going on locals, Ian, you know. It's been absolutely like just brilliant for this channel. So friends, there you go, there's our locals link, just scrolling by. It's also in the box below. I'm going to play us out by playing my Ocean Road promo. I hope you don't mind me doing this. It's just we're in December, I'm rowing across the Atlantic Ocean in a rowing boat. to raise aware with some absolute legends, all of us recovered veterans, recovered from PTSD, very dark place, as we talked about. We want to shine a light for people that are struggling with their mental health and raise some money for charity. I'll play this. Ian, massive thank you. Stay on the line. I'm just going to turn our video off just temporarily. Yours will stay on. To everyone at home, the chat's been flying past tonight. Thank you so much. Some great stuff coming in. We've really got quite an enlightened audience out there, and that's a very special thing for me, because life would be quite blimmin' lonely, wouldn't it, if there weren't other people that knew this kind of stuff. So let me play the promo. If you can spare us a fiver, folks, there's a link below in the comments. It'll be really, really kind if you do. Let's see what I'm saying. Hello, friends. I'm Chris Thrall. I'm a former Royal Marines commando turned author, adventurer, and podcast host. In 2022, I was awarded English Veteran of the Year for inspiration for my work taking on extreme challenges to raise awareness of the alarming rate of veteran suicide.
And the winner is Chris Thrall.
I've run an ultra marathon a day, the length of the United Kingdom.
A former Royal Marines commander running all the way from John O'Groats. Chris Thrall has run an ultra marathon every day since the 1st of September.
I've recreated the Royal Marines' legendary 9-mile speed march. And run up to 2 marathons a day in 52 degrees heat across the Sahara Desert.
There are YouTubers and then there are YouTubers. Let's go and meet Chris, who is specialized in extreme adventures.
I always say you get one life. If you live it right, one is enough. But my life wasn't always so fun. After leaving the forces, I ended up homeless and suffering severe mental health challenges. But changing my mindset, I've gone on to achieve all my goals in 85 countries across all 7 continents. And I now dedicate my life to supporting others to achieve theirs. Now I'm taking on my biggest challenge yet. I've put together a crew of former elite fighting men, all of whom have fought their own personal battles.
And my name's Sean Phelps. I'm a former Royal Marines commando. I've had 3 very good friends take their own lives.
Hey, my name's Christopher Kay. I was with the British Army. I did one operational tour in Iraq, and I completely understand the challenges people face when they leave.
And as Team Ocean's Elite, we will row across the Atlantic Ocean. Our mission is to shine a light for our fellow veterans who are struggling with their mental health or homelessness or contemplating suicide, and raise vital funds and support for children who've lost a parent in conflict or taking their own life. Please support us by joining our social media, sharing all our posts, and if you can, please spare a fiver for our GoFundMe. You'll find all the links below this video. Thank you, friends. Much love. Friends, thank you for listening to the Bought the T-Shirt podcast. Please like, subscribe, and share. And don't forget to follow me on social media. Username, Chris Thrall. Instagram, Chris.Thrall. Thank you.
Have you heard about the 2018 study that showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? No? Well, now you have. I'm Kat, mother of 3 and founder of Ritual, the company making traceability the new standard in the supplement industry. I remember staring at my prenatal vitamins and finding all these things I was trying to avoid: high amounts of heavy metals, synthetic colorants, and unnecessary ingredients. So, at 4 months pregnant, I quit my job and started Ritual because I believe that all women deserve to know what they're putting in their bodies and why. I'm so proud of our prenatal vitamin. The ingredients are 100% traceable, it's third-party tested for microbes and heavy metals, and recently received the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. You see, we trace like a mother because Let's be honest, no one cares quite like a mother. But don't just take my word for it. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/prenatal.